3 years back, what the plans are for revision?
It was some time ago that we last discussed this. It was 2 years ago, in 2012. And at that time, the ISB were coming to the end of their investigation of what we thought the implementation of IFRS 8 had done for financial reporting. We took those findings to the ISB in January of 2013, together with an academic review of what had been reported on the effect of IFRS 8. And we published the feedback statement and report in the summer of 2013. Now, because this was a converged standard with the US, we then spent about 6 months discussing with the FASB staff what their findings had been on their review. Because to the extent that they were considering adjusting their standard, we wanted to be aware of that so that we could reflect that in ours or consider that. And in fact, in January of this year, the FASB decided that they wouldn't add segment reporting to their agenda. So we decided that we would carry on alone and investigate that. And what we've been doing since then is we've been going to people with the full picture of what we found, what the proposals were, to ask people whether they think that those proposals would work, whether they'd help them, whether they'd improve the standard, and improve the reporting that's produced by the standard. So what I'd like to ask you today is, for those findings, what's important to you as investors? What do you think the ISB should do, which would improve reporting from your perspective? And just what priority would you ascribe to the different proposals? So if that's all right, the first one, which is on the second page of Agenda Paper 3, considers the effect of aggregation of operating segments. Now, generally speaking, and it's probably no surprise, speaking to investors would like more information. They think there is too much aggregation. Of particular concern, I think, is where people feel that dissimilar segments are being added together with the subtext, perhaps, of blurring unpleasant news in one of those segments or not providing the most useful information possible. So we've been thinking about ways of stopping that happening. Now, the standard itself already includes some provisions to prevent that. It has a quantitative threshold, so that if a segment is greater than 10%, it should be disclosed separately and things like that. But it also has an overarching requirement that only segments which have similar economic characteristics should be aggregated. Now, some people have said we should explain what similar economic characteristics mean. Other people have actually said, well, that's quite clear. If they don't know what it means, nothing to tell them is going to help them. I think there is a problem, perhaps, in the standard, in that when it discusses similar economic characteristic, it talks a lot about gross margin percentages. And for some people, that is actually an arithmetic outcome of a lot of mixed drivers. You might happen to have the same gross margin percentage and have no economic characteristics in common whatsoever. So really my question to you on aggregation is, do you think it is a concern? We've heard from some people that it is a concern. And if it is, do you think that there's a solution that we could use to improve the standard?
Regarding aggregation, I do believe it is one of the major sources of frustration. That's pretty clear. The worst thing I've seen, in fact, is presenting separate segments that are not businesses, i.e. that do not exist as a standalone. I think we should have a kind of rule saying if this activity or segment does not exist as a standalone, i.e. you're listed, unlisted, or has never been in any transaction in any M&A deal, it does not needs the definition of a business. I will give you a simple example, which is very common in the telecom industry. There used to be fixed and mobile business. Now the common practice in the telecom industry in Europe is to report on one side the residential business, then the corporate business, then you have the network, which is the cost business, I would say. But I have never seen any deal, any business listed as, let's say, residential telecom business. It does not exist. It's a way they sell the product, but as a business, it does not exist. I have never seen any deal, any disposal of residential business, because it would imply selling part of the network over. So the aggregation here is irrelevant. I have seen some companies selling the mobile activity because it implies moving the customer and the network, but never a residential one. So I think there should be some rules describing it should meet this definition of business in a way.
What?
Robert?
Well, I just wanted to echo. I wanted to echo the frustration with the aggregation, and so first of all, I really do think they were aggregating pieces that don't make sense. The management approach is very, very dangerous because it basically means we can put it the way that looks the best. I like. The comment of legal entity for a separate reason is that a significant number of users may be actually interested in the operating subsidiaries. And so I'm always struggling with, I'm not interested in the holding of the parent company, I'm interested in one of the subsidiaries, and segmented information is not providing information on the legal entity subsidiaries. And it's not even, you're very often not even able to guess. I was looking at one, and the substantial business I'm interested in is a piece of another piece. So I really can't get any information on that company from the consolidated financial statements. It's just been mixed in too much, and they clearly slice and dice it in a way that if you're actually interested in any hard, the cement business or the type, you'd never find it. So I don't sure what the answer to that is, but aggregation is clearly a problem.
We used to have something else. Huh? We used to have risk based on risk and reward. What was the original before IFRS 8 criterion? And somehow that feels a lot more stable, and it's not mentioned here as an alternative. But somehow that the risk and reward is much more objective than through the eyes of management. Actually, how through the eyes of management is the standard at the moment, really? Because you're already making caveats about 10% and about similar economic characteristics. I mean, that's already affecting through the eyes of management. The old risk and reward was, I think, resulted in more stable segments, and also in more, it's more aligned with how investors would further produce that information. Any comments here? Peter.
My view is that occasionally I end up with problems in this respect in very large companies. And I think one of the companies that Jacques refers to is a Swedish telecom company.
But also a Dutch.
I wonder if this is a standard setting issue or an audit issue. Because if we want the figures to reflect through the eyes of management, I think the auditors need to help us in this respect. And if they aggregate segments that are not managed aggregated, I think the audit should actually go in here and say, no, this is not in line with IFRS 8, you need to separate them. So to me, it's more an audit issue, actually. And also, if we have taken this standard that we want to see the company presented through the eyes of management, if we now are going back and forcing them into mandatory information. I think we need to do it all over again and scrap the map through the item management and take the other approach.
Hey.
No, I just wanted to tell you that if we were to apply the risk and rewards concept to the situation described by Jacques, where they separate residential versus corporate instead of separating fixed and mobile,
yeah.
Would a risk and rewards approach lead necessarily to what you want to achieve, i.e. mobile versus fixed, or would management say, no, my risk and rewards, as I see it, is the residential business has a different risk profile from the corporate business? I mean, do you think that risk and reward will necessarily solve your problem?
I'm not 100% sure, but the one thing is the management approach is in fact very flexible, because once the company organizes this way or sells the product this way, then it has some consequence on the way it reports. It has also the consequence of reorganization. One of the Swedish companies I cover had, since they have implemented IFRS 8, changed every year the sub-segment, transferring each cyber. I mean, this is just because Mr. X is reporting to Mr. A and Mr. Z is reporting to Mr. C. And every year, I've got a restatement for the previous year.
I mean,
over 6 or 7 years, I've got 8 different segment reporting. And this is through the management. I do accept that there are some limits in the sold an activity. Okay, so sector is not defined exactly the same. But when you keep an activity in your group, and just every year you transfer part of the sub-business to another one, just because you report it differently inside the group, you lost, let's be honest.
We
okay?
Hold on.
Can I think, Jane?
One thing, because I was just talking. The argument about auditing, I'm a bit frustrated by that when I hear it. I think the management approach is intrinsically flexible, let's put it this way. And when you've got a flexible standard, auditing it and implementing it is incredibly flexible. And so I think a standard should be in a way demanding, because then it can deliver a clearer picture, I believe. And it can. I think auditors are in a more comfortable position to constrain the management, which is part of their job. If the standard is flexible at the beginning, you will end with poor information. It is not an implementation issue. It's the standard that is flexible.
Can I just say that given that the ISB has decided that they're not reopening the management perspective, if we're actually to get value from these comments, wouldn't it be better if we looked at ways to improve the existing basis in accordance with the paper, rather than trying to sort of throw the standard out and start again? It would be interesting from the staff's point of view to know what you think of the individual proposals which are on the table, rather than going back to stage one.
I think maybe that's wise, that at least produces the most valuable input for the staff, which is the purpose of us getting here. I think the users here are very much on the same page, that maybe it wasn't that improving everything. Does everyone still, in this context, want to keep their board space? Or Jane, do you still want to have a comment?
This legal entity idea, because of the through the eyes of management thing, you can still have, what about vertical integration? So again, thinking about telecoms companies, you know, I'd be quite interested in thinking, to me, procuring handsets, you know, and selling them is a different type of business than providing a network service, and trying to get some unbundling of that happening under Rev Reg. But it may well be in the management's interest through their eyes that they regard the handset as a marketing cost and as some, you know, as an integral part of providing a network service. So I don't, we're sort of, I think we have to end up with perhaps tightening up the similar economic characteristics. But I too was surprised at you at these sort of numerical definitions. I suspect it may get you back into the business model idea. You know, it doesn't seem to me to be a similar business model to procure handsets as to provide a network service, for example, even if they're not two separate legal entities. But the other thing about the auditing, I mean, I wouldn't give up on that. You could, now that we're going to get auditors' reports, maybe they could say about certain companies, and, you know, if you've got within sectors, you've got some companies that disaggregate on a much more helpful basis, and other companies that don't, because it's an argument about vertical integration, and we can't possibly treat it all the same. Then actually the auditor's report should point that out. Otherwise, I mean, if you're going to stick through the eyes of management, in the end, it's going to come down to the market putting a discount on companies like the Shocker that Jack has just described, that messes about all the time because it changes its management matrix all the time. Does it trade at a discount, Jack, or are its products so wonderful that nevertheless it's...
If I would make a statement on the European telecoms, I think everybody has been moving to that, so it's a bit uncomfortable for the investor to put a discount on the whole industry.
Not that the whole industry isn't changing its segments every year, like the
world. Oh, you were referring to changes, yes. Some less than the others, yeah, I would say. But I was referring to the fact that they were aggregating businesses that were irrelevant for the investors. I have in mind one company which is still using the corporate residential thing, and they do not discuss it during the investor conference call. The segment reporting is now in an appendix.
Can I just say, because I'm very well aware of what happens in European telecoms because of my history on revenue, the segment reporting that's done on European telecoms is actually done on a geographical basis. The IFRS information is done geographically because they manage it by geographical markets. And interestingly, if we went down the statutory reporting route, that is probably how that would align, because statutorily entities would be divided by country. The information that you're referring to is generally in the financial presentations to investors or to the management commentary, where they then talk more about product lines. And the reorganization tends to be in the one that you're talking about particularly, where they change the management of some of their geographical areas so that, I don't know, non-European entities may be moved around slightly and some countries are moved slightly. So I think we need to be quite careful when we think about that. And one of the things which we'll get onto later, which I think is quite an important benefit of the standard, is that to the extent, one of the reasons that the IASB adopted this approach was that they thought that thereafter all presentations would be done on the same basis, so that the management commentary, the financial presentations, and the financial statements themselves would all reflect the management perspective. And so that would give greater weight to the information and greater comfort. And I think if that were the case, then that would help all of you perhaps in these issues.
Can I ask a quick question about enforcement? Is there a mechanism by which if, you know, a lot of users of accounts find that, you know, there's some practice that's particularly difficult, some, you know, aggregation that's particularly gross? What is the, can you talk them to ESMA or
I've been talking to the Dutch regulator on this, and they say it's so difficult to challenge. For an auditor, it's so difficult to challenge, is this really through your eyes of management?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, it's you have to go, you have to find such strong evidence before you say, this is not how you look at the business, and tell the CEO that in his face. And that's quite, so it's basically not very auditable.
the through the eyes of management segmentation.
What regulators tend to rely upon is whether or not all of the reporting is done on the same basis. So what regulators have told us is that to the extent an entity has an investor presentation in one format, a management commentary in another format, and IFRSA in a third format, they then challenge them to say, you should have one management perspective that you're used everywhere. What's your genuine management perspective? And a number of jurisdictions have been targeting that and reducing diversity in that way.
It would take some time.
I think the eyes of management conceptually is sound. I think I agree with what Peter was saying. It is an auditing and an enforcement issue. I don't think the standard is fundamentally kind of flawed from that perspective. I think there's been shortfalls in auditing and enforcement. More positively, I think what I've seen in a number of Western European bank reports over the last couple of years is that cohesion between the management report and then what you look at in the kind of the operating segment. In fact, sometimes a lot of that is actually a direct cross-reference that this is our segment reporting. And there is some sensible split of the banking segments in a way that makes sense, as well as kind of having this ROM segment of stuff that they're trying to get rid of, which is always a key focus. So I'm more positive about the way that IFRS 8 is starting to work, certainly within the banking industry now. I would agree that it really does need to be, in some industries, sound like it needs to be better audited or better enforced. Interesting point is in terms of UK audit standards, you'd be aware that we now have these long form audit reports and the key risks need to be described to the auditor, and maybe we'll start to see some of that filter through as we looked at the basis of management reporting operating segments compared to how they actually look at it within their business, and that might drive a better level of comparability in those industries.
Okay. Can I, Tania, did you have a comment?
Yes, I did. I are in the same camp that, I mean, getting the view of management through management eyes is helpful. And I think the point that was made with regards to the enforcement of the standard, that if management is presenting a view through IAS 8, then surely that should continue to go through its presentations and its discussion around the business. I think it's very important, I think, that we do not necessarily try to confuse. If management did their business in a particular way, we should try to glean as much information from the way they report their segments and how they think about their business, and I think that is quite informative. I do know here in Australia we have the same problems about chopping and changing. One of the questions, obviously, in the paper that's been put to us is, if you chop and change the segments, how many years of information prior to the change should we see? I think that helps maybe address some of the issues that have been raised. So I feel the standard, it is what it is. Maybe making sure that management don't, play around with it. But to the extent that, there are troubles when they chop and change, but perhaps there is one of the questions here that we could put forward that will actually help to address that issue.
Tanya's pretty much covered the chop and change, and the so we were trying to be focused on how the standard should be improved. I think the methodology there is to require some level of an explanation of why the change was made and some sort of information so that we get to see what it was. So let's say 2 years or some methodology that we could link between the two. And I think that would have that would help the problem, and it would also discourage rapid changes, because every time you change, you have to there's a sort of a reconciliation has to be done. Management will think I don't want to make the reconciliation punitive, but I do want to make it sufficiently useful that users can see what's happening and potentially make it so that management will not do it on a whimsical basis.
Thanks.
Thank you. give you the benefit of spending 30 years on the other side of the table as a preparer on this. Just a couple of cautions is I wouldn't put too much stock in just how much enforcement power the auditors have got in terms of aggregating segments. It's one thing I heard telecom and cement, that's easy, you know, but once they're going residential versus network versus mobile, I think it's unfair to assume the auditors know more about the company than company's management does and how it operates. So I'm just giving a word of caution about the limits, you know, of their power. I think when you look at management statements, you know, internal information, the reality is big companies, the information exists in all sorts of, you know, matrices at vertical, horizontal, lateral. And so in one meeting, the CEO might worry about marketing strategy and the marketing channels, and it's one mix of information. The next day, you're talking about liquidity and where trapped equity is, and it's an entirely different set of information. But they both, the CODM makes decisions on both. So the good chance the information exists in multiple formats. So when it goes to the regulators, say you get your investor presentation this way, your internal reports that way, and the answer is, well, yeah, all these different versions are needed, you know, because the focus changes from day to day in what's important. So, just a few.
Steve, you have this
first. I was just going to ask Robert, we're straying into question two, I guess, with your comment about the trends and the restatement. In there, April has put in, unless it is not practicable to do so. Do you think we should give a get out like that, or just say you must restate?
I'm divided on that answer. I think that there always are cases where it's not practical, but I think it would be better if you took it out. I'm trying to invent a fact pattern where, you know, this is management reporting. You've got the information. You did it last year. You did it this year. What I'm saying is try and figure out, try and tell us what it would have been if you'd stayed it on the same system last year. Yes, there's some work involved. Maybe that's the practicality limit. But I deep down, I suspect management probably wants to sort of, they're aggregating pieces anyway. They have the base pieces. So if you leave it in, I'm afraid it'll get used too much as sort of where I'm going.
But I need a comment on that. I think that's a very good indicator that they really don't know what they are doing. If they cannot reconciliate, I mean, that's the easy question to put to them. Why? Well, we don't have the data. Oh, that scares me. Mm-hmm. So I think you can have it in as a kind of escape clause, but if they use it too much, that will definitely have an impact on investors. I mean, if they constantly change and cannot reconciliate, that will definitely impact the investors.
Steve, I think I agree with Peter. If you take that caveat out, and it's really just impossible to do so, the company will not have a problem by not doing so because it's just not possible. And in fact, there was some comments that if you want to make a sum of the parts valuation of a company, this is like the start point. You know how much are you involved there? How much are you involved? This is critical information. Usually, it should be critical information. So and it's important enough that these companies should have a strong try at using it and giving it a caveat on the start. So maybe it's not never practical to produce 3 years back information.
Never
practical.
Peter, are you there?
Sure. Trying to solve some of the existing problem, I think providing more guidance on aggregation would be helpful. I think, in fact, it will not solve all the problems. It still would be some flexibility. But it will prevent and perhaps have been giving some food to the auditors prevents some of the weak reporting we have seen. I think providing guidance on it should be using, let's say, similar assets it should be, if they are regulated, the same regulation, because if some two businesses are regulated in different ways, I don't think it should be aggregated. And also, I think there should be a kind of guidance. The reported business should exist somewhere as a standalone business. If there is no such entity or such business existing on a standalone basis, it is not a business.
Okay, Peter?
Yes.
By the way, this is very practical because in the end, I will make a sum of the parts and try to make a valuation. So if this business does not exist everywhere, anywhere on the earth, I mean, I will be unable to make a valuation. And this is as basic as that. The segment reporting is used for making a valuation, putting a price on the business, guessing a price, let's be honest.
If we are talking about chapter 2, preservation of trend data reorganization, I think going back, demanding 5 years is too much.
Yeah.
Going back 3 years is valid, and I think definitely
reasonable.
Possible. But the best companies present 5 years if they reorganize, but that should be an extra bonus to them. But what is important is on a quarterly basis, because this very much relates to the estimates that you do on a quarterly basis. If you have a reshuffle from 1 year to another, the quarterly figures are extremely important. So you need, but that is only for 2 years, this year and the previous year.
Okay.
And also, just to comment on April's previous suggestion, don't try to change it all. I think you suggest a lot of good improvements, like the line items that you suggest, and I think you definitely have analyzed the problems in a correct way. But my view is that this relates to like 10-15% of the market that I work with. Most of the companies actually have very good segment reporting that I look through. So it's not like 80% is like cheating all the time, from my point of view. But definitely, if you come to smaller companies, the standard is less detailed, or what the segment reporting is less detailed.
Okay, I'm going to do two more questions, and then April, will you continue with the presentation?
Yes.
Okay. Tanya.
Sorry, yes, I just wanted to raise a point when we were talking about the requirement to provide that information. And taking out, I think it's the taking out the if it's not practicable to do so. What about the circumstances? I mean, I think when a company is static, this all makes sense. But in the circumstances of major divestments or acquisitions, it's quite clear that there is going to be often, as a result, a reorganisation of the business, a change in focus, and one would expect the segments to change. The segments will be reported differently. I think it's a little harsh, isn't it, you know, really in a practical sense to take out that unless practicable to do so, because there are going to be situations where a company just is not able to provide you with that information as a result of a change in the company's strategy through an acquisition or a divestment. So I just wanted to sort of place that on the table and think through what that would mean.
Well, I can try to answer that, because if it's a divestment, you can designate it as a segment that was divested and exclude it from the continuing business. Make a distinction between segments that are continued and segments that are divested, taking the last moment, taking the start point, the most recent year. I think. This problem you described, you already have in the present situation, where there's only 2 years of history. I mean, things can change in 1 year. Companies can solve that at the moment. I'm not sure if that's a practical obstacle. But I hear lots of inspiration. Peter.
Wait, can I make a suggestion, please? Because we have five questions in the paper, and we're only on the first one.
Yeah. So, and I think it's really good that people are interested in this. I'm just wondering for April's, for April, do we need to focus on only one, like what questions are the most important? And then maybe we should also ask CMAQ what area is the most important, because it sounds like we should only be focusing on maybe one other or two other questions in the paper.
Okay, I mean, I think what I'd be interested in perhaps is question four. Allocation of reconciling items to individual statements, because that's something where I've heard quite compelling arguments both ways. Investors very often say that you'd like the information to be allocated, reconciling items to be allocated to individual segments. You may remember that because the management perspective is different from the financial statements themselves, there will be a reconciliation between the IFRS information and the financial statements. And in those reconciliations, a number of people think it's difficult to understand what those reconciling items really mean and how you should allocate them to the individual businesses that you're trying to value. So I've got a lot of sympathy for investors who say that any reconciling item should be allocated over the individual segments. On the other hand, I know myself from having been a preparer for a number of years, that there are some things where it's very difficult to actually come up with a sensible basis to allocate those adjustments. And then the concern is, if I were to just put through a mechanical allocation of what can be quite large figures, is that going to destroy the value of the original segregation and into segments itself? So I quite like your perspective on that. How much do you think that a methodological, I'm trying to think of a word here, an allocation to a segment which is not done on a sort of a scientific basis, do you think that would destroy the value of the information?
Can I just ask a quick question? Are we talking about things like corporate expenses and things like corporate HQs and costs
like goodwill amortization, which may not have been allocated? Any of the things which are not sort of taken into this sort of what they consider to be their ongoing operating?
And goodwill as such.
I mean, it should be allocated to the businesses, and it's compulsory.
Can we do it in order, please?
Yeah. If you have comments, please raise your name, please.
Peter. Thank you, Martin. I think this is a problem area for users. There's a big temptation to have some quite significant sort of reconciling items that are the value of general. The danger is that if you force companies to allocate everything, they will come up with sort of strange and uninformative ways of allocating that will actually end up with even less helpful information than you have at the start. So I think the desirable sort of path is to require allocation where it makes sense and can be done on some sort of sensible basis. A, you know, goodwill impairment would seem to me to be a relatively straightforward thing to allocate. You can allocate sort of central headquarter costs based on headcount or some other judgmental basis. So again, it will be a judgment call, but it will be the sort of methodology that an analyst would be using if they had the information or if they were doing some sort of sum of the parts exercises Shant was talking about. There may still be some items which are just intrinsically hard to allocate to segments, and I think there what one would want is the company to say, we can't allocate this, and briefly, this is why. So to try and sort of effectively comply or explain would seem to be a sensible path. But it's not going to be something where I think we can have hard rules. Essentially, we threw out the hard rules when we took the management sort of perspective, and so we have to carry on down that path.
Jacques, did you
about goodwill allocation?
Yeah, I would almost completely agree with what was just said. I think I like having, well, I don't like it, but I think it's informative to have that sort of those reconciling items to give you a sense of how they manage the different segments and how much sort of corporate overhead or fat maybe in the business. But I do think that what needs to improve is the disclosure of exactly what's in there, because
You know, pension costs is one thing where, you know, you're seeing companies, if they don't include it in their assessment of segments, that sometimes now gravitating to this other segment. But if you're looking at two companies where one has it in there and one doesn't, it just impacts comparability. So I would say I like the presentation. I just think the disclosure needs to improve in terms of what is in that, in those reconciling items. Because a lot of times it's just a line that says corporate or something like that. Mm.
What struck me is that if you have the segment reporting and it's through the eyes of management, the total quite often actually matches the total in the P&L. There's an operating profit item, you see the totals that match. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the segments and that the calculations, the numbers that were per segment provided, are also IFRS, that were in line with IFRS. So if the totals match, there's no requirement that the segment additions should also match IFRS, I mean through the eyes of management. There is also an incentive for companies to show their most valuable parts perform best. If you have a company that produces chemicals and another part is agrochemicals, the agrochemical part tends to be much higher valuated than the basic chemical part, and it doesn't give me security whether those amounts were correctly implemented. So yeah, I just wonder how can you require it if the totals match, you know, that the how it's comprised of is also valid, or can you not require it?
Peter, yeah. Dennis, did you want to step in since we can't, since you know we have to like make sure these guys here are speaking in turn?
No, not much to add to the debate.
Okay. Peter, yours?
Same here. I think the main points have been made. I would like to reemphasize that allocation for allocation's sake is probably the worst thing that we could do, especially if we want to go for some of the parts valuations that would distort a lot of the segment information, unless, of course, there's good disclosures on how everything fits together. But we should hold back from trying to allocate as much as possible.
The next question is the line items. We have quite a lot of people actually say that important line items weren't being reported to them. And when academics looked at this, we did find that there were fewer line items reported in accordance with IFRS 8 compared with IS 14. And it's difficult to know what to do with that, because speaking to investors, generally you all have your favorite line items which are really important to your understanding of the figures. But the problem is they can vary significantly between investors, and particularly between segments. So if you're looking at pharma, you may be interested in R&D and all sorts of information, which would be of no interest to anyone who was looking at, say, construction or what have you. And so it's very difficult from writing a standard point of view to think, how would we phrase something which would give everyone the information they need? Now, if you look at page 6, some of the thoughts that we put down there, I think from a practical standard setting point of view, perhaps the best way to address this would simply be to include something from the second paragraph, what the objective of the standard is, which is to provide information to investors, and why that information is important, what types of information are important. So you're interested in non-cash expenses. You're interested in differences between profits and cash, impairment of business, all the things that are noted there. And so that's, I think, where we are at the moment. Now, Mark has just mentioned to me that there are some very specific line items which are of interest and which aren't really required by any of our standards, things like returns, isn't it? And that's a sort of a level of detail which I think it might be quite difficult for us to sort of address individually. And to the extent it's returns, it's really the sort of more the revenue standard that discussion would be had. But what do you think about line items? Do you think that if we put in a discussion based on that sort of second paragraph, do you think that would help, or do you think we need to go down the route of trying to agree a list of line items? The concern we have, of course, about requiring individual line items is that generally we're trying to get away from boilerplate disclosures. And so generally we're not sort of giving people a checklist of 48 items to include.
Thank you. I guess the point that I was making, or that at the moment most of the segment analysis that I look at very much focuses on the income statement, and there's very little attention to the balance sheet. And if you're lucky, you get total assets. When I'm looking at valuing a business, I'm interested in the return on invested capital. I'm interested in the return on equity. And when I look at segment analysis, it's very difficult to come up with the relevant information in many of the businesses that I look at. So from our perspective, or from my perspective, I think it would be helpful if there was more information on the balance sheet. If we got a little bit more information on the debt in a particular segment, or we got the information on equity in a particular segment, so that we can work out the return on equity, we can work out the return on invested capital over a period of time. Thank you.
Okay, Peter?
Yeah, I'd agree with Mark in terms of balance sheet disclosures. I think we could do more. That, you know, there are challenges around allocating things like debt, but I think it's worth exploring that in more detail. I think the other thing that's worth thinking about is that companies, when they're presenting to investors, will often sort of highlight. So if you are a pharma company, you will highlight R&D spending, and whether there's a way that we can require companies to do on a segmental basis what they do on an overall basis. I mean, the standard is very much focused on what's reported up to the CODM. It would be interesting to think of what the CODM reports to the market and then requiring that on a segment basis as well as an overall company basis.
Okay, Peter Marcus.
Yes, I agree with Mark and Peter. I would definitely want the company to give me the capital employed, and also whether it includes goodwill or not, some kind of explanations around the difficult parts. But I think the line items that you suggest in this paper is valid, but I don't think we can require, for the reasons that you mentioned previously, but we can suggest that these are line items that are important and are very frequent in most companies over a four-year period, for instance. Point at the problem, but require them? No, that is go too far. We end up in that kind of discussion that you mentioned previously.
Steve?
I'm interested, many of you are commenting on the second capital employed, because this has exercised me for years. I remember the old UK GAAP, I think, only requires segment assets. Then we switched in the UK to IFRS, and IAS 14 says segment assets and segment liabilities. And we move to IFRS 8, which says segment assets and maybe liabilities, if reported to management. And then we changed IFRS 8, and we said maybe assets and maybe liabilities, reported to management.
And we have
gone through more change. What's interesting is that when we did the performance reporting project, the abandoned one, and we had this operating, investing, financing, we had that operating section, although the IESB wasn't proposing to change segment reporting because we had a separate project on it, the FASB wanted to roll into the project a change to segment reporting on the back of that financial statement presentation project. What they were proposing to do, I think, was to take that operating bit of the P&L and the operating bit of the balance sheet and analyze the whole thing by segment. Is my recollection right, Philippe, on that? I think
it was operating bit of the cash flow statement, not the balance sheet.
I thought it was P&L and cash flow, was it, and not the balance sheet? But they were proposing just to take the line items that appear in the P&L and then analyze that.
Actually, there was a discussion of the balance sheet, but I think relatively quickly it was concluded that the balance sheet is not segmented, so the operating segment doesn't appear on the balance sheet, only appears in the, could be appearing in the cash flow statement and P&L. Yeah.
But anyway, they were proposing a significant increase in line items on the back of that financial statement presentation project.
I actually think that it would be wonderful. The only thing is, it doesn't sound like through the eyes of management, because the line items in the P&L, in the primary financial statements, are very much directed.
It preserves through the eyes of management for determining the segments, but it moves away from it in terms of reporting performance.
Yeah. Yeah. It's to be honest, I mean, if I analyze a company, I start with the primary financial statements. That's the total where I should end up with. I make corrections to the primary financial statements, and then I more or less take the operating segment information as a manner to find a proportion to allocate the sum in the adjusted sums in the financial statement across those segments. I mean, it would make life easier for if you go down that route. Those stairs, I think that would be helpful. But what about other things?
I would add to Mark's comment that, you know, most companies talk a lot about working capital these days. And it's strange not to have the segment information for working capital because it's obviously operational and related to a certain segment. There may be some difficulties to split some parts of it. Inventories may be shared between segments and these kind of things, but you know, this would be very useful if you could have
that. That's why I agree with that. I don't have any experience in managing companies, but I've been auditing dozens of companies and looking at internal reporting packages. Most of the time, there is a big focus on CapEx, working capital, resources managed by the division, whatever. So I think it does exist in many cases, it's just not reported and also not reporting. So can we impose it? Maybe not, but when it exists, I think it should be reported.
Yeah.
Sure.
I do agree that one of the things that has disappeared from IFRS 8 is balance sheet items or, let's say, the CapEx and some assets figures. It has completely disappeared. This is a source of frustration. And I think we have to accept that some of these, let's say, very classical fields, I mean, assets, working capital, are information that are available, so that is it, that are followed by the management. So it should be included in some part of the segment reporting. And this is quite necessary, and I believe we could have some kind of, let's say, a recommendation saying if there is something that is disclosed on a regular basis, let's say like R&D for the pharma industry, or on the face of the income statement, it might be not compulsory, but a good thing to have these items reported also in the segment reporting. I believe if this is important for the whole company, I don't see why it should not be completely non-important for the segment. I mean,
What we require is what we get from the best companies. And I have never come across a producing company that don't try to follow up the capital employed and the return on capital employed. If they say they are done doing that, that's definitely a warning sign. So I think it's not something extraordinary that we demand. And if they can't get it, we can have this escape clause, and then we can start digging.
Robert?
I want to take this conversation just a little bit further. We've approached this, we've accepted that
Second, information should be based on through the eyes of management. I cannot believe that management is not explicitly managing the assets. They might be grouping some of the debt at the corporate level that would have to be that would have to be allocated, but I am absolutely sure they're allocating internally. They must be reporting profit, because that's bonus for the management team. So profit is there, and I'm willing to bet you that returns are there. So, you know, I think we have to reinforce the thought process all the way through. It seems to be an almost impossible presumption. You know, if management says we actually don't have returns and assets and liabilities, I think they have to be able to say we are unable to do those things and let them put it in the financial statements. So back to Mark's comment, I think what you're asking for, since we've gone down the route of through the eyes of management, I think what you're asking for should actually exist in some report somewhere, and shouldn't be a problem. Return assets, liabilities, as allocated by management, plus returns are all things that management should be able to give us fairly easily and with no cost.
But the thing, what Steve opened up there is through the eyes of management, we can leave that intact for the segments, for defining the segments. But we can, the ISV could consider to be a little bit more strict on the line items.
Well, I hear the comment on the line items, but I'm just, by the way, I
make a match with the primary financial statements.
Mm-hmm. It has to balance the primary financial statements, but we've decided through the eyes of management, and so there's going to be this fuzziness. I think it was Peter who said it's going to be there. But this is a case where this is going to work to our advantage. They have to be able to give us profit returns, assets and liabilities for the segments, because they're doing it by the way you manage it. And that includes working capital, Carlos, too, because that's also that's got to be managed by their management segments.
Okay.
Can I just say? Oh, sorry.
Okay. What we are suggesting is that we have many line items in common that we would look at. So in lining standards, that I don't think that there is any problem. And the all these, for example, the capital employed, etc., should be looked at by the management, and not only by investors or users, but also the management to manage all these segments efficiently. But at the same time, there may be some line items which is more industry specific, like R&D. Maybe
yes.
It is quite contentious concept, but maybe the materiality could be used to distinguish that the line items which is specific to the entity or industry.
Gary, we're at time, but I just want to leave Robert, maybe I can talk at break, because I think, in general, I agree with where you're going, but I think I think you're going further than typically would exist. So typically in segments, companies, you know, the top of the house wants segment management to focus on what the segment management can control. They don't necessarily want to worry about the capitalization of the company. They don't necessarily want to worry about how you funded the pension plans. Inventory, probably receivables, and the decision to accelerate payables or something probably comes out of corporate treasury. So I philosophically understand and agree with you, and I just don't think companies frequently are managed quite as far as you think they are.
I did put a caveat in there for instance, a lot of the corporate debt may be managed centrally, and some working capital is attached to a division or it's a product line, but some of the management, granted, there are some, and pension certainly would be corporate.
Yeah, I mean, it's working capital, like deferred taxes could be in working capital, and that wouldn't be. So I philosophically agree with where you're going, and I just think it's not likely many companies can get that. But we can take it offline. I don't want to, or at times, and Bart will yell at me if we run over.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk first, or?
No, I was really going to make the point that Gary makes, that in my experience, debt is almost always managed centrally. I don't think I've ever seen it not managed centrally.
And they wouldn't get the same, subsidiaries wouldn't get the same credit rating as the group, so it's, you know, it's
that there also are a lot of, I do a lot of, my careers always seem to be with companies that have minority shareholders for some reason. And the minority, and if once you get minority shareholders, there may be debt that is specific to that, to the subsidiaries. So yes, there's a corporate, but there also may be segmented debt too.
Okay. I'd like to have maybe a last suggestion is what you could do is somehow keep it generic by including in the standard saying provide in your line items key information about your P&L, about your financial position and your cash flow statement. Thereby you'll broaden out the scope, and actually I think we all agree there should there should be valid line items in all of these statements instead of just focusing on the P&L or only on the balance sheet. And then I think you can validly expand. There's no need to throw out the window all the, you know, through the eyes of management line items, but at least include key elements from the primary financial statements as well. And this so and highlight this, highlight those as being related to the primary financial statements. So it's you keep it generic that way, and you do. We end up with more line items that we can actually use. Maybe that's a way to solve it.
So would it make? I think that this doesn't have to end with this session. So if you have strong views about segments, we can definitely arrange further discussions with April, since she's going through this process. This seems to be quite a good topic.
Did we settle the 3 years in the previous four quarters then? Is that a sort of view, assuming that's what we want?
Yes. I think I assume that was
okay.
The
yeah. One. Thanks.
Yeah.
Subject to companies doing quarters, they may not.
Yeah.
Well, thank you. We have coffee.
Back at 11:15.
11:15 minutes break.
Thank you, guys.
Yes, I don't watch out.
What we'll do is we'll allow the market.
Yes.